Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across the table from me is my lovely wife, Bianca Reichert.
Lovely?
Yeah.
Wife?
Both of these words are accurate.
You're so sweet. You're the lovely one.
Oh, let's not make people barf all over their,
on
their commutes, barfing on their subways and their cars on their own laps. You're making them barf with how damn sweet you are right now.
You're a terror.
That's
me. A terror.
That's me.
Just like Dracul.
Oh, brought it around. Nice. Dracul.
That's how they say it.
It's a cool way to say it.
I don't like it said that way.
Dracula. You don't?
It's too, like, mouthy.
I think Dracula. When they say it like that, it's Dracul. I don't think you even do the A. I think it's just Dracul.
Dracul. I like when they scream, Dracul! They do that a lot in the movie.
It's pretty cool. If it wasn't clear by the title of this episode and us talking about Dracula right out of the gate, we are talking about Bram Stoker's Dracula, the movie adaptation of the 1890-something book. And it's on a lot of streaming services. So if you've not watched it yet, I'd recommend go check it out. It looks like the whole movie's on YouTube for free.
Yeah,
it's
check
also
it out.
Free with ads on like Crackle, Amazon. It's kind of all over the place.
It's a strange movie.
It is, but I think most of the strangeness is good.
Dan, do you think it's accurate to call this a adaptation of the book, even though it has the name of the book? Because it really takes a lot of liberties, well, apparently. Because if the audience doesn't know, Dan recently read Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes, it took me a long time to read it. I read it for like over a month, and then I had like 5 pages left, and we watched the movie, and then on the bus. Well, I'm giving too much information here. I on the way home the next day, yes, it was a pleasant, balmy day. I finished the book the next day after we watched it. And I remember thinking, like, while we were watching the movie, like, unless things really change in the last handful of pages in this book, this movie takes a major detour. And I say a major detour because it's one specific thing. Because, like, I think the main beats, it really gets right. Mm-hmm.
Describe the main beats that it gets right, because I did not read the book.
I'll tell you, it's basically everything except for the main hook of the movie.
Okay.
Which the hook of the movie is...
The love story.
Yeah, we get this flashback to, like, this extremely was confusing to me when we started watching it, because it's like this flashback of Dracula during his battle days and stuff, and that doesn't happen in the book at all. Like, you hear old Dracula explain to Harker, like, oh, I used to fight all these armies and stuff, but you never see it. So it's like, okay, I get they want to show him in his badass armor they made for the movie.
Right.
But then it's like, wait, there are these characters played by Winona Ryder and Anthony Hopkins in the flashback where I knew that, like, okay, wait, Winona Ryder plays Mina, who is Jonathan Harker's wife in the book. They get married in the book. And there's zero romantic anything between Mina and Dracula in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Except for he does bite her. So that scene where, like, they come in and she's kind of like drinking the blood from his chest, that happens in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But the main hook of the movie is this, like, oh, in the flashback, Elisabetta, his wife, dies, played by Winona Ryder. She commits suicide and he's told that her soul is in hell, which... I gotta say, Anthony Hopkins being in the flashback, I have no idea what that's
about. What was up with that?
That doesn't make any goddamn sense to me.
I thought it would be, like, for a reason that I would kind of determine as the movie went along, but it just seems so random. The Winona Ryder double casting there makes sense to me because,
yeah.
I mean, his wife, Elisabetta, commits suicide after the Turks send a letter claiming that Dracula had died when in reality he did not.
Yeah.
And then in her sadness and grief, she decides to... jump out a window.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes sense then that when he encounters Mina, who is also played by Winona Ryder and thus looks exactly like Elisabetta, he would be like, oh, this is my love who I've crossed oceans of time for. But the Anthony Hopkins thing doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense because it's never alluded to. Like, I don't know, was Van Helsing supposed to be the reincarnation of this, like, wizard dude or whatever, or, like, church member back in the day? Like, again, like, that the Mina stuff and the Elisabetta stuff never happens in the book, period.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is the vision Coppola had for this movie, is that, oh, it's Dracula trying to reclaim this lost love or whatever, sure, there's a logic there.
Right.
There's no logic to the Anthony Hopkins thing. It's just confusing.
That scene, though, where he discovers that Mina's dead and he screams and then he, I guess, at that point, decides to become a vampire. I don't really know. But there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, he stabs blood a crucifix. And yeah, the crucifix
blood's
bleeds.
Pouring blood out of the, and he screams, blood is life. And it's a really cool scene.
The statues actually, are bleeding or crying blood.
Can I nerd out for a second?
Oh, yes, please.
I had never seen this movie before, obviously. And I recognized that blood is life monologue from the beginning of a metal album, Into Eternity's debut album. And I subsequently went back and listened to that album, and it's very good. Into Eternity, if you like melodic death metal, check them out. The first two albums, Into Eternity and Dead or Dreaming, are very good. The subsequent albums are not good. Yeah, just wanted to put that out there.
But doesn't he, in the flashback at the beginning, doesn't he say it in Romanian?
Yes,
and then, like,
that's...
later... Oh, wait, is that the one? Yes. Is that the soundbite? Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. But you knew... You recognized it as The Blood is the Life?
Well, no, there was the subtitles there.
But when you heard the song before you'd seen the movie, did you just...
Well, I had heard the song so many times, but I didn't know what that was from.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then when I heard it, it was like, oh, that's what this is from.
Yeah, that's fun when stuff like that
happens. Yeah, yeah. It was like... But when I first saw it, I was like, what is that? I could not remember for the life of me. And then I remembered that Into Eternity album, like, takes bits from different movies and uses them as intros to the song. So I was like, maybe it's that album. So I listened again, and I was like, oh, it is this album.
Okay, I could see why that would be a good thing to put on a metal album. For
yeah,
sure.
Totally.
You know, for my issues with, I guess, it veering wildly from the book as far as this Mina love story, the flashback's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And, you know, it was a critical part if they were going to make that love story work. Like, kind of to a lesser extent that Castlevania, the show, did.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they try to humanize Dracula in this. And I don't know. You know, I feel like he would have been more appreciated if he didn't have that horrible heart-shaped hairstyle. That was not doing him any favors when he was an old clammy man.
It's bad, and I remember being a kid and being confused because, like, you know, when you grow up and, like, Halloween and stuff, people dress up like Dracula. Mm-hmm. It's always, I don't know if it's Christopher Lee or Bela Lugosi or who this is based on, but, like, you know, the classic Dracula, like, the fangs and the big, like, black, like, formal wear thing, and just a lot of times it's, like, the jet black hair, you know?
Like kind that, of like...
Count Chocula?
I was going to say kind of like posh looking fancy guy.
Yeah, formal wear, yeah. Slicked hair and stuff.
Count Chocula.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. I'm not wrong. But yeah, like I think as a kid, that is the Dracula you think of.
Right.
And so this movie came out in 92, so I would have been 8 years old. And I remember all of a sudden this movie, like this movie was like an event. It was a big movie. It was Coppola before he went, I mean, he was definitely past his prime at this point. But like people talked about this. It had a Super Nintendo game about it. Like there was a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror where Mr. Burns dressed up like this version of Dracula. Mm-hmm. So it was just weird to go from like, wait, I thought Dracula looked like this. And now every depiction I'm seeing in the early 90s is this like puffy, weird butthead thing.
Right.
But that actually is way more accurate to the book.
Interesting.
That is, he is described in the book as like, he actually has like a long white mustache in the book, but he looks old and gross in the book. And he's just this guy who's been living up in this castle by himself for like hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's got hairy palms and all that stuff. Like he's not this like sexy Dracula thing, which they do the younger Dracula thing in this, which they spend some time on in the book where it's like Harker at one point goes down and opens up one of those boxes of soil and it's like, whoa, holy shit, it's him. But he's like young looking.
Right.
I think that's after he's fed. Basically, he looks like that or can look like that. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing of like, again, the Mina love story, like he like shows up in town and like they're going to movies and shit. Mm-hmm. And it's like that. None of that happens. And that's why I was like, when I read the last part of the book after watching the movie, I was like, unless they like allude to like this thing here, like that love story is not part of this. Like Mina hates Dracula in the book.
So I guess I'm wondering if that love story, which is such a critical part of the movie, isn't in the book. What is the main hook of the book? Because you said, and to my surprise, you said that Harker escapes Dracula's castle pretty early on in the book.
Yes.
And in my mind, having never read the book, I assumed that like the whole movie was, or the whole book was just Harker trying to escape the castle.
I thought that too. And honestly, that's when I started reading the book. Like that was the stuff that kind of gripped me the most is this idea of like, I'm going to this weird guy's castle to do this like insurance thing or this real estate deal. And then wait, shit's fucked up here. Like everything's, I need to get the fuck out of here. Oh no, I'm a prisoner. Oh, this guy's crawling down the walls like a spider. Like it's, you know, like that was my favorite shit for sure in the book.
To go from thinking like something's a little weird here to seeing your host just crawling like a spider.
That moment when he's looking out the window, just like, what the fuck? Like I need to leave here immediately. Like I loved that shit in the book. But the book, so yeah, Harker escapes fairly early, and like a giant chunk of the book in the middle is Lucy getting sick and everything. But like, it seems like in the movie, Keanu's just kind of there, like trapped in this room with the three women for like most of the movie, it seems.
Yeah.
It always made me laugh. And like, there's this scene where he still doesn't really know what's going on, and all of a sudden these, like, vampire ladies are, like, coming out of the sheets and everything, and like, trying to, like, suck on him and lick him and stuff. It's just the idea of, like, whoa, all right, hot vampire ladies, and then fucking Count Dracula flies in the room throwing smoke bombs or whatever the fuck he's doing. Like, it's a real boner groaner there. Just, yeah, he's trapped in the fucking lady room for, like, a good chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
And then he comes back with gray hair and...
Yeah, so we haven't mentioned this yet, but can we talk about Keanu in this movie?
Oh, we can talk about that.
So Keanu, apparently he was cast, according to Coppola, and even Coppola regrets this casting, yeah. I've read. But he was cast because at the time, and I guess it's still the case, he was kind of a heartthrob.
Mm-hmm. We're talking Point Break, pre-Speed.
Yeah, and he wanted someone that would appeal to girls, I guess. But man... I mean, I was prepared for a shitty English accent, but gee whiz.
Just
atrocious. It was, I can't even, like, it was just his regular voice, but, like, this weird tempo to it.
It's weird, like, there are sentences that he says that, like, will start, like, him trying to do an English accent, and then just go into Keanu, and then he'll, like, remember by the end of the sentence. He'll be like, oh, thank you for inviting me to your castle, Lord Dracula. Like, it's just, like, way all over the place.
Oh, man, it's bad. Yeah, he's not good in this movie.
He's not. Look, we all love Keanu. He's excellent, but this is not.
And I think we'll all readily admit that he's not the best actor out there.
No one accuses him of that.
But he's just such a likable guy.
He is, and like also for this movie, I just think it's a really cool cast. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, Winona Ryder's great, Keanu's awesome, even though he's not awesome in this movie. Oldman is just having a fucking blast here.
Oh my god, Gary Oldman. Oh yeah, and yeah, he just like fucking eats up every single scene. He completely owns it. And that's what this movie needed. Like, they needed someone like Oldman who was going to fucking give it his all and like not half-ass anything and just be completely into this character.
And he's always really good. Like, he's done a lot of characters where there's been a lot of makeup and like wacky looks and stuff, like Hannibal, where he's like unrecognizable, to like Fifth Element, where he's really wild and everything. Like, or The Professional. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, I think The Professional, I think, is right up your alley. What
I never even heard of it.
Oh, it's when Natalie Portman, when she was a child actor, she was in that, and you know, they call it Leon the Professional sometimes. Gary Oldman's in it. It's about a sniper who has to, it's been forever since I've seen it, but Jean Reno, the actor, he's a sniper that has to protect Natalie Portman as a child, if I remember right. And Gary Oldman's just fucking wild, and it's just a cool sniper movie from like the early 90s.
Interesting.
When like Oldman wasn't like fully well known yet or anything.
And like, he wore like a ton of like...
He had like dreads and stuff. He was like this really wild. Like, have you ever seen the gif or the clip where he's like, everyone, send everyone! Like, he's screaming it.
Maybe.
Okay. Oh boy, if that's
we'll
on streaming.
It out.
I would love to. Because, like, Oldman, he's so good at playing such different characters. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk, even on this podcast sometimes, about, like, so many people that are like, okay, they're playing that role they always play. Oh, there's Seth Rogen playing kind of a stoner dumbass. Oldman can do anything. And in this movie alone, he's, like, badass warrior with that cool-ass armor. He's the, like, romantic, like, you know, trying to woo Winona Ryder, cool young Dracula. He's creepy-ass old Dracula. He's fucking Wolfman, Batman, all this stuff. Like, he's so fucking good in this.
Yeah, he's really good. He's one of those actors that are just on that elite tier in terms of, like, you know, he's going to give an amazing performance.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to say he carries this, because I think there's a lot of genuinely really good stuff in this movie.
Yeah, even though Winona Ryder's accent wasn't great either, I thought she did a decent job for what she did. I really love this era of Winona Ryder.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Heathers, this movie was really good. I'd recently watched Reality Bites, which she was awesome in. Yeah, I thought she was pretty good in this. And from what I read, this movie actually wouldn't or might not have existed if it weren't for her, because she really liked the script. And apparently she had a role in Godfather 3, so that's how she knew Coppola, but she backed out from exhaustion or something.
Huh.
But
was she not in the final movie?
She was not, no.
Oh, okay.
But then she saw the script, and she gave it to Coppola, and then, you know, so maybe this movie wouldn't have existed without her. But just to go back to Gary Oldman for a second, another interesting thing that I read was, like, apparently a lot of times we talk about him really being into the character. Well, like, if the other actors weren't, like, giving the reaction that the director wanted, like, for instance, when Lucy is being possessed, that first scene where she's being possessed, like she wasn't, I don't know if she wasn't comfortable or whatever, but they had Gary Oldman whisper something to her, and no one knows what it was, but that just made her act out this like orgasmic, just completely possessed Whoa. Thing. Yeah. And then also in the scene where they walk in on him and Mina, and then he turns into that crazy like bat wolf thing.
Yeah.
They didn't look scared enough. So apparently he went and whispered something to each and every one of them, something really terrible, and no one knows what it is. Oh, but God. They all looked really terrified after that.
Oh, wow.
I read that on IMDb, but I don't know if it's true. But
man, it's you talk about like the wolf and bat stuff and all that. Like that really surprised me watching the movie because like that stuff happens in the book, but it definitely doesn't say anything like, oh, it looked like a humanoid version of a bat or a wolf. Like when he arrives on that ship, when he first comes to town and bites Lucy and stuff, like you hear reports and stuff about like, oh, the captain had like tied his hands with a rosary and a cross along the steering wheel to try to save himself as, you know, this Dracula was presumably killing everyone on the ship. But then like when it crashed into the shore, people like reported seeing like what looked like a large dog jumping off of the thing. And it's like when we actually see Lucy get bit in the movie, which is very different. They're not doing sexy dances in a fucking hedge maze. You know, that's not how it happens in the book. But he's like a full on like werewolf.
Yeah.
Like it is like a humanoid. It is Gary Oldman in a werewolf costume. And he's a full on like dude in a bat suit later on when in the book they say like, oh, it was a big bat that flew in the window. But they don't say like it looked like a dude, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, I do feel like if someone has the ability to turn themselves into vapor, they should also be able to turn themselves into a 100% wolf or a 100% bat and not this weird animorphs in between.
Well, and that's the thing I expected too, because this is a really fun thing. And like, you know, I'd never really like looked into Dracula lore or, or known too much about it, but I was always a Castlevania fan. And in Symphony of the Night, my favorite one, Alucard, Dracula backwards, not to spoil it for you, but you unlock the ability to turn into a wolf and a bat and mist. And like, so for the longest time, for like 20 years, I just thought like, oh, that's the Symphony of the Night abilities or whatever. And it is just like a wolf and a bat and stuff. And so when I started reading the book and you're getting these Van Helsing explanations of like, oh, he can take the form of mist or bat. And I was like, oh man, Castlevania was just like taking that straight from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that stuff was super awesome.
It's really interesting. It's interesting, like I said, as someone who hasn't read the book, to like see all the tropes of Dracula. Like when I think of Dracula, I think of like the aging thing, obviously, the weird like kind of seductive quality. But that's just because I have a very topical relationship with Dracula, having not read the books and having like very limited exposure to him in other forms of media. It's interesting to see that stuff pop up. Like, especially talking to you and hearing about how it was kind of, in some ways, aside from the Mina stuff, pretty faithful to the book in some ways.
Well, a lot of it's really kind of dumbed down. Like, a lot of the characters are really, and again, I, you know, I'm pretty new to reading a lot. And apparently this is the case virtually every time with a book going to a movie. You don't have as much space to talk about the actual character. And so you get kind of like the essence of the character, but like there's so much more detail in the books. One thing that I thought was completely different is Lucy. And because in the book, she's a huge part of the book. And it goes into like all this stuff. She's friends with Mina and like for so long had trouble sleepwalking and everything. And she actually got bit when she slept walked to this cemetery. And Dracula was able to kind of like warp to the Romanian dirt or whatever and bite her on a park bench and stuff in the book. But in the movie, she's pretty one dimensional as just this like kind of horny idiot who's always like, oh, Mina, have you ever fucked? You know, it's just like that's basically her character.
Yeah, that's she's a rich girl who wants to sleep with people.
Yeah, but it's much cooler, I think, the way they do it in the book, because she's kind of just kind of prim and proper in the books. Like, she's beautiful in the book, and so she has these three suitors, and they're in the movie. You know, you got the Texan guy, and you got Cary Elwes as the fancy guy, and all that stuff. They all exist, but, like, she's just kind of like a pretty rich girl. She's not in any way, like, sexualized or anything in the book until she gets bit. And so then it's like, that's when you can tell shit's, like, totally nuts. It's like, I forgot what guy marries her or, like, which of the three winds up being her dude. But in the book, they, like, encounter her, like, I think down in this tomb or whatever, and she, like, turns around and has this look of just, like, pure lust in her face that she's never had before. And she starts getting really kind of, like, seductive and, like, oh, come here and kiss me. You know, like, it's So it's a turn for the character that shows how much she's turned since she got bit.
Right.
Which I don't think you get that in the movie at all, because she's just a horny idiot for a while. Then she gets bit and, like, you know, they have the thing where they have to chop her head off and all that, which happened in the book. But it was a cooler turn.
Right. Yeah. I read that Winona Ryder, like, when she first read the script, she was so intrigued by it because it was, like, you know, obviously set in the late 1800s, and women weren't really allowed to embrace their sexuality like they are today. And so, like, there was this element of repressed sexuality and everything. But then when you actually watch the movie, it's pretty pretty on the nose and pretty heavy-handed with that stuff.
I mean, her reading, like, the book about,
yeah,
like,
that, like, Arabian Nights book. And, yeah. And then obviously just, like, Lucy being so, I don't know, into the guys, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, in a very one-dimensional way.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah, and, like, Mina...
There was no, like, element really of repression. They were pretty open about it.
Yeah, and, like, Mina in the book, like, there's nothing really sexual about her in the book, but she is a much bigger character as far as, like, just preparing to, like, storm Dracula's castle and kill him. Like, she is the one who's, like, keeping these, like, very detailed journals and, like, putting together the timeline, and she's, like, essential, whereas, like, the dudes are, like, let's get some fucking guns and stakes and stuff, and let's try to find what house he's in now, and we're going to kill him. And she's the one kind of putting together all the information. She's kind of like the detective here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the thing at the end doesn't happen where she's, like, doing some weird ritual or whatever in the movie. Like, that doesn't happen in the book. Because, again, she hates Dracula. She's just kind of one of the team that's trying to kill Dracula. Did they allude in the movie? I can't remember at the end, when they're getting ready in the book to go storm Dracula's castle, they know Mina has been bit, and they're like, oh shit, like, when somebody's bit, Dracula can kind of see through them and hear through them, and basically it's like a, I don't want to say the name because it's going to be a voice assistant, you know, that's like recording you basically. It's, oh shit, Dracula can hear us if we're talking here. Did they touch on that at all in the movie?
I don't think so.
Because it was cool in the book because they had to, like, intentionally, like, she was telling them, like, hey guys, don't talk about your plan in front of me, okay? You have to keep me in the dark, because if I know, there's a chance he knows. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with that. There's, like, at night, she would kind of get overtaken in, like, a trance by, like, the Dracula stuff, but there were, like, at sunrise and sunset, there was a window where Van Helsing could, like, hypnotize her, and kind of, like, she could describe, like, okay, I can hear, there's waves, there's, and that's how they know Dracula's on a boat heading back to the castle. Like, it's kind of a cool element.
Interesting. It, like, kind of gives her a psychic ability.
Yeah, at certain times of days when she's hypnotized by Van Helsing. Like, at one point, he hypnotizes her in the movie, but they don't really, like, go into all the detail.
Yeah. Yeah, in the movie, she definitely seems, after a certain, like, seduction period, she kind of seems really into the idea of being a vampire, too.
Yeah.
Because that, after knowing this guy for, I don't know, a day, she decides it's worth resigning herself to immortality.
Yes.
And, you know, having to feed off human blood in order to be with him. But then we get to see the little, like, you know, human elements of Dracula poke through, because he's kind of conflicted, because, of course, he wants to spend his life with her, but he doesn't want to subject her to, like, always being, like, walking around as a soulless, undead person, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But eventually he relents, and she is bit, and she becomes, you know, Dracula lady. And I remember at the end when I was really confused by this, and let me know if it goes into this in the book at all. But when she kills him and puts the stake through his heart.
Right. Doesn't happen in the book.
Okay. All right. Well, that answers my question. But it seems like he wanted it. It was like, why didn't you just, like, fucking fall into a stake then yourself and just end it all if you want it that badly?
You know, I don't know. There's a bunch of, like, weird rules around Dracula about how he can't, like, go into a place unless he's invited first. Like, maybe it's a, like, I can't self-terminate type thing. Like,
I would just, like, give Van Helsing a call and be like, listen, man, I think I'm ready to go if you want to come and poke me in the heart with a stake and then chop my head off.
Maybe he's a prideful man, so maybe that's it.
I don't know.
There's a subtle humanization of him in the book. Mm-hmm. I think, again, they really go above... They go for it with the love story in this one. But I think in the book, it's more just like, oh, this is this, like, sad old man who's been, like, confined to this castle. And, like, but he's definitely, like, a super villain in the book still that, like, is a scourge to the earth and needs to be eliminated. You know, it's not sympathetic, really. I think when they kill him at the end, I think one of the guys slits his throat and the other one puts a stake in his heart. And I think they say something about, like, instantly before he disappears into dust, it's just this look of, like, pure peace or whatever. So it
does. Good for him.
Yeah, he's had a weird life.
I think on based on the Dracula-related properties that I've seen, the spectrum of most sympathetic to least, even though I haven't read the book, least, I, based on what you said, I think is the book version, Bram Stoker's Dracula, the book.
Yeah.
In the middle is the movie.
Okay.
And then I think, and the most sympathetic is Dracula from Castlevania, the show. Because I was like kind of rooting for him. I felt really bad for him.
They did such a fucking good job with Dracula in that show.
Yeah.
And then like to even do the smart thing where it's like, we're not going to spoil much about Castlevania here. Don't worry about that. But like the way they brought in Carmilla. Yeah. Like, and then finding out that that was actually a vampire story that predated Dracula and like to work that into the show. I can't wait for season 3 of that. Right. That's awesome.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Right.
Some quick final stuff here. Like, how cool was some of the like early stuff with old Dracula and the castle as far as like the way they played with shadows and light and stuff like that?
It's really
and,
cool. Like how the shadows would move independently.
Yeah. Yeah, and they touch on that type of stuff in the book where it's like, hey, there's this huge mirror that Harker's shaving at, and like all of a sudden Dracula's behind him, but he's like, whoa, I did not see you in the mirror. Like, what the fuck? Like,
that's awesome.
These like little hints that things are off, basically.
Yeah, it's a, but the special effects in the movie, if you want to just talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently Coppola was really gung-ho about it being all practical effects. And after his special effects team said like, oh, this is impossible, he fired them and then hired his son to do it. And I think born from that, like out of just like the desperation to make something work, they have some really creative solutions like the projection of stuff on the train ride,
the eyes in the sky,
the eyes in the scene where Harker is shaving and then Dracula comes in the room, like apparently, and I didn't even notice this, but the room gets smaller to make it feel like more claustrophobic Dracula approaches, like little stuff like that.
And what a good move too, because like we're talking about 92 when like early CGI attempts were being made basically, but you look at any CGI from that era and it is real bad.
Yes.
I think because of the way he did this, like this movie aged really well.
Right, yeah.
And like it's campy, but I think it really works for this. Like even the stuff like the bad Keanu accent and the Winona accent and stuff, I don't think it's really to the detriment of the movie because, like, it is a really grim gothic story and stuff, but it doesn't really – it seems to be having fun with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really – honestly, the more I think about this movie, the more removed I am from actually watching it, the more I appreciate it, I think. Because it was just so over the top and completely, like – just completely owned what it was going for.
Yeah, it leaned hard into the whole vibe that Coppola wanted for it.
Yeah.
And I really think it works. Like, I see it as a separate product from the book. The book is way more in-depth than everything. But I think the movie is just, it's just a cool thing to look at. Mm-hmm. And there are some incredible performances. I really have good things to say about this movie, if you can't tell.
It was great. Yeah, and I went in kind of assuming that it would be a faithful adaptation of the book. But obviously, based on what you've said, it was not. But it's confusing because it was called Bram Stoker's Dracula, right?
Yeah.
I mean, based on that, you'd think it'd be, I don't know, resembling the book more faithfully.
Well, the thing is, if you remove the Dracula and Mina main hook of the movie, it is, I think it's a lot more faithful than a lot of movies of the era were. When I think back at like 80s and 90s movies that are based on books, a lot of them are very loose with their interpretations. I think of like, I remember reading The Lost World and then seeing the movie and being like, this is just a different characters and a totally different plot and everything. There were exceptions, but I think things varied a lot more wildly back
then. When you say the author's name in the title,
yes, that's
my point. I feel like it kind of, in your mind, will get you expecting it to be something resembling the story more.
And it did. I just think that Coppola definitely got it in his head that like, oh, I've got an idea for a little twist on this. Mm-hmm. What if he loved Mina and it was because the lady looked like her a while ago? Like it is a major departure from the book, and it's a main part of the movie. But, I mean, a lot of movies just, like, introduce characters that weren't there and things like that. And, like, this, they were all there. There's differences. So it's, like, Van Helsing in the book is not kind of like a funny old coot sometimes, the way Anthony Hopkins plays it in the movie. And also Renfield in the book, the Tom Waits character from the movie, He was not Harker's predecessor. Mm-hmm. Like the way they say right at the beginning, they're like, oh, before Harker, you know, there was Renfield and he went to Transylvania and went crazy. And mm-hmm. No, that's not the case at all. He was just a guy in a mental asylum that Dracula basically like possessed and used because he was next to, because the mental asylum was next to that Carfax mm-hmm. house that he wanted to like move into. Which that's a question for you as someone who didn't read the book. Did you feel like the movie made it clear to you what the boxes of soil stuff was? Because that's a huge part of the book.
Well, I knew what it was, like what the deal was, but I can't remember if that's because I knew that going into the movie or if it's because they said it in the movie.
I think when I was reading the book, I might have told you some stuff about that. Yeah, so that's like, I think for a while I thought that he was like warping between them, but I think he actually has to be physically carried in that dirt, and that's the dirt where he can kind of restore his powers right. and stuff. So like, they actually have to put the physical box on a boat and he has to pay these guys to send him to and from the castle and stuff.
You know, you talk about the book being told through diary entries and, you know, it's spending a great deal of time on the Lucy stuff and then the plot to you know, kill Dracula in his castle and stuff. And obviously in the book, you have so much room to just meditate on these subjects and really go into, you know, detail about what they're like. And like we said, the movie is more of a snapshot. You don't get all of that. Maybe it was because, obviously, by virtue of the fact that it's a movie and there's not enough space, they had to replace, or he had to replace the meandering nature of the book with something more punchy that would kind of get across the nature of Dracula, and they chose a love story because everyone loves a good love story.
That totally could be the thought process, because like the middle of Dracula really does drag, because mm-hmm. I was so gripped by the beginning.
Right.
I was like, this is about like some of the most gripped I've ever been by a book, and then it's still good, but like that Lucy stuff takes so long, and then at the end it picks up when they go to storm the castle right. and all that, and there's some parts in between where they encounter him in the various houses and stuff that's interesting, but
yeah. Well, you being a really gung-ho about reading, in the last year, like you're usually done with a book in like a week.
Yeah.
So the fact that it took you about a month to finish Dracula, I knew it was probably getting a little slow.
It was. It's a lot of just like Van Helsing here. Lucy's sick again. Oh, maybe garlic will help. Like, and then it's like a whole chapter about like, yeah, we'll put garlic on her while she sleeps. Oh no, her mom took it off to
also,
make her comfortable.
Dan, has Anthony Hopkins just always been a 60-year-old man?
I think so. I think it's like the Neil Young thing where he's never been young.
He's just always been what he is now.
Yes, he's always looked that exact age, yeah. like to today in Westworld.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's, hey, he's fucking awesome. He's
yeah,
great.
He's great. Another one of those actors that's on that like elite tier of amazing acting.
And we've talked a lot about like accuracy from books and movies and stuff like that. And I think in more recent years, like post 2000, definitely, I'd say, I think you see now that Hollywood has gotten that you can be more faithful to the source material and still be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw that like the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm not a Lord of the Rings expert. I made it halfway through Fellowship mm-hmm. and stopped. But as far as I know, those are pretty much faithful. Obviously there's details that were left out and characters that were left out, but those were faithful and those were huge hits. And
right.
then you see stuff, even like graphic novel stuff like 300 and Sin City and Watchmen,
mm-hmm.
or are those all Zack Snyder? I think that might all be Zack Snyder, but like his whole thing, even though, you know, I don't like Zack Snyder's movies or whatever, mm-hmm. but is like, hey, this is shot for shot. Like
right.
I'm recreating the panels from the graphic novels, and those movies were hits.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of them kind of suffered from that as well, like Watchmen,
oh.
you know.
Yeah, I don't like his movies. I don't like his directing style, but I think more so now you're seeing like deadly faithful
mm-hmm.
adaptations
mm-hmm.
from other media to movies, and that works a lot of the time.
Yeah.
We just watched Gone Girl not too long ago after I read the book, and that's kind of a very similar thing. Actually, that is more faithful to the book than Dracula is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing I'm realizing now that I'm reading more, is that like, oh man, I like this and it's being faithful and everything, but like, oh man, you had such a better idea. The depth of what you know about these characters is so much better,
right.
and scenes are so much more impactful in the books. Not to say, like, you know, Gone Girl's a really well-made
mm-hmm.
Movie. In fact, I'm reading Girl with a Dragon Tattoo right now, and I'm looking forward to seeing, like, the Fincher movie, and I know there's other versions that were made before that. I'd like to see that, but I'm sure it's going to be the same thing, where it's like, man, Fincher did a real good job with this, but I liked the versions from the book that
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just goes with the media.
Yeah.
I mean, the medium, it's like you just don't have enough space. And, you know, seeing a room versus reading about the color of the floor and the wallpaper and the texture
yeah.
of the blanket, you know, you're not going to absorb all those details like you would in a book, you know, especially when you're reading – You make this image in your mind of what you're reading. At least I do. I feel like most people kind of have like a movie going on in their head when they read, right?
Yeah.
And you have to create all those details yourself. So because they're coming from your own mind, I feel like they stick with you more. They're more impactful. And you have more time to just think about all this stuff versus it just being spoon-fed to you in a movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And sometimes that can be to the detriment of the film version. Mm-hmm. But there are also times with like really good directors that they can use the medium of film to do stuff the books obviously can't do. To make it something else. Like, right. I think of, I read Clockwork Orange and, you know, I really like the movie a lot. And, you know, it's Kubrick, and it's one of the best directors of all time. And the stuff he did was just like his framing and the soundtrack and everything was so remarkable in that movie. Stuff that, you know, the book is really, really good, but like, there's no way you're going to be able to play with visuals and audio the way that Kubrick did. So. Right. It's, man, reading books more has been a really, really interesting thing as someone who's always loved movies. You know, it's given me a real appreciation for this stuff.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I think it's pretty clear here. I think we're both pretty thumbs up on this movie here.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, I there was not any moment in the movie where I was like, oh, when is this going to end?
Yeah.
Which is like a lot of the times when we do stuff for Painting the Stream, that's the case.
Yeah.
But not with this one.
Yeah, and, you know, I liked it a lot in a different way than I liked the book, you know? I like them both a lot, but, like, I think this, you know, for all the kind of excess and everything that really works in the visuals and the performances, and whereas the book, I think I go to more for the story,
right.
You know? Which, you know, again, makes sense. Film and books, turns out they're different mediums that do different things, but I like both of them a lot in this case. I think this might be underrated. You don't really hear this movie get brought up a lot now for as big of a deal it was when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
People, I mean, the fact that the whole movie just lives on some guy's YouTube channel right now and no one's taking it down. It's like, did we all forget about this movie? Like, let's check it out.
Well, prior to watching it, the one thing you commented on, and neither of us had seen it, was that it was kind of notorious for the Keanu casting. So maybe that kind of took on a life of its own and outlived the good parts of the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like notorious for this one thing, but people kind of forgot that it's a really good movie in its own right. Like, you know, maybe if they had put, I don't know, Robert De Niro in as Harker or something and he gave a killer performance. I don't know why he'd be Harker. He's way too old. But I guess back then he wouldn't be. But, you know, maybe it would be seen as like, oh, this is the last great Coppola movie until he made fucking Jack or whatever. Have you seen Jack?
No.
Do you know the concept of Jack?
Is that the Robin Williams one you're telling me about?
Yes, where Robin Williams plays a 10-year-old who has some sort of like disease that makes his body, it's the Solid Snake Metal Gear Solid 4 disease where you start aging rapidly. So basically it's 40-year-old Robin Williams playing a 10-year-old.
So the whole Metal Gear Solid story was based on Coppola's Jack.
Yes. And then there's the one in the 60s, too, where it's Robin Williams' father, and then the cloning process. It's a whole thing. But, yeah, oh, God, don't get me started. We always find a way.
we mentioned Metal Gear a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, I think people are used to that at this point. But, yeah, big, big thumbs up. I really can't recommend Bram Stoker's Dracula enough. I'm not going to say it's, like, a masterwork of cinema history
it's
or anything.
It's a lot of fun. It's one of those, like, just good love stories. It's you're conflicted. You're into it. The special effects are great. The acting is really good for the most part.
Everyone seems like they're having a good time, from Coppola to Oldman to everyone. Like, it just, I don't know. It's got a good feel to this whole movie, I think. So, yeah, big old thumbs up.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yep. So that'll be it for our discussion on this Panning the Stream here. We want to, as always, thank everyone that participates in our listener support program. That is something, if you go to panningthestream.com, it's a service that Anchor provides where you can click support this podcast and you can do $1, $5, or $10 a month, or you can do it once and cancel. No problem there. That goes to us. That keeps the lights on. We like making this podcast each and every week for you. I think this is like our 75th Sunday in a row. 75 Sundays in a row.
Jeez.
Yeah. We've been doing this for a while.
Wild.
Yeah. And it's great. I really have a lot of fun. We got this whole process down, everything. We got people listening.
It's so cool that people listen. Like, I'm just so, it's such a cool thing. Like, obviously you and I just really enjoy doing it, but to think that we are kind of giving people a half hour to a 45-minute little thing to listen to every week.
Yeah, and maybe a movie to watch that they wouldn't have thought of before.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's a really great thing. So if you want to support us, you can go to paintingthestream.com and click support this podcast. Or if you just listen to the podcast, thank you so much anyway.
Thank you.
But if you do support this podcast, you will get a special personalized Bonku just for you.
Get a little treat. Get a little treat. Get a little treat. A Bonku.
It's very good. For those who don't know, that is why Weird Bonk is her Twitter handle. Because one time I noticed early on in dating that she's frequently just singing things to the tunes of songs. I remember one time I was playing Metroid for like 8 hours straight, and she sang the song she just sang, but it was Take a Little Break from Metroid. And I realized, like, wait, you do that. You're like Weird Al. You just do that stuff all the time. Thus, Weird Bonk became what I call it.
Well, when you confronted me with that, with the fact that, hey, Bianca, that, you do this a lot, it was like shocking to me because I didn't realize that I did it a lot. I didn't even realize that you ever noticed it because you never responded whenever I did it.
I don't think you notice it.
Yeah, I must not. It was like kind of shortly after I moved in with you that you... Yeah.
And I instantly was like, oh, that's the thing. She does that a lot. I like it. Don't stop.
Listen, everyone's got to sing a little song every now and then.
Yes. Including Weird Bonk. And Weird Bonk's got a Bonku for... Or do you?
I do, of course.
Oh, okay.
This one's for Deebs. Deebs, we really appreciate you. Deebs has been a frequent supporter of us. And what can I say, man? You're a quality person. We really appreciate you. We hope that every day, at least once a day, you have something that you can just smile about. I hope that for you. And I hope today that maybe this Bonku can make you smile.
Let's hear it.
There was once a time when dinosaurs roamed the earth, but then Deebs arrived.
Oh, wow. Mm. That's good.
Deebs was the big... No, Big Bang created the world. What was...
The Garden of Eden? Was Adam and Eve?
No, what was the thing that destroyed the dinosaurs?
It was an asteroid.
Asteroid.
Is he the asteroid?
Deebs is the asteroid, yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay, yeah. Wow. All right, powerful. Powerful Deebs.
He has an effect on things.
Well, thank you, Deebs, for your effect on our podcast by helping us out via
thanks,
listener
man.
Support. That's about it. Do you have any suggestions this week
folks? Daniel. I would like to suggest season 2 of Mindhunter, which is available on Netflix now. If you enjoyed the first season, I think the second season is even better. And for those who aren't familiar with the series, it's kind of an exploration of the early days of criminal profiling. Like, before there was even, these guys in the show, they invent the term serial killer. So that's how, like, early on it is.
Oh, wow.
Before people realize that, like, hey, maybe these experiences that these serial killers and other violent criminals had growing up might play some kind of effect and some kind of role in why they're doing what they're doing.
Huh.
This season focuses on the Atlanta child murders, which are largely unsolved series of murders that happened in Atlanta in like the 70s, like over 20 kids murdered.
So is it anthology, like a True Detective thing where both seasons are separate from each other?
No,
or
it's a continuation.
It's continuous. So same like detectives
same
and all
detectives,
that stuff.
Uh-huh. Same story. It's just a different focus. But they also touch a little bit on the BTK stuff, which...
Oh, that was
as a Kansas
my home
guy.
State.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. I remember Wichita.
I'm sure. Yeah. It does it in this really creepy way where it's just kind of like every now and then there'll be a scene with BTK and it doesn't show anything. It's like very subtle. It's just the storytelling. It's Fincher. Fincher directs.
Oh, really?
I think he directs the whole series. I know he directs some of the episodes, so maybe the whole series. But also, I just want to comment on the casting in the show is just amazing. I mean, Ed Kemper, the guy who plays Ed Kemper, is unbelievable. They have Son of Sam in this season,
oh, yeah?
And the guy looks exactly like David Berkowitz. I don't know how they find these people, but it's amazing. Charles Manson's in the season. Yeah, it's a really good show. Definitely check it out.
Was that Netflix you said?
Uh-huh.
Cool. My suggestion, just the same lines entirely, extra toasty Cheez-Its.
I knew you were going to say that.
So Bonk was just gone for about a week and a half. She was dog sitting out in Jersey. And she, being just the delightful, compassionate, thoughtful human being she is, ordered just a ton of stuff that she knew I would like and would be able to like make for myself.
Yeah,
like
PBJ stuff,
elements for sandwiches, snacks, some terror chips. Love those. And he got me extra toasty Cheez-Its,
mm-hmm.
which I have in a long time, like from birth, basically, Cheez-It aficionado.
From birth.
I mean, probably not far. I bet I was eating handfuls of that at 2 at the latest,
mm-hmm.
Because holy shit, my childhood was just a blur of shoving Cheez-Its in my mouth a lot of the times with the tower where I would make like easy cheese and then another Cheez-It and then easy cheese. Yeah, it's been fucking awesome. But yes, from day one of my life, Cheez-Its, aficionado, every flavor. I like the cheddar jack, I like the hot and spicy, I like the white cheddar, reduced fat. I think it's really good. It doesn't get as much dust on your hands. Love it all. The duos, all that, the snaps.
And from what I understand, so just to give you guys a little insight in my thinking, I saw the Cheez-Its on sale on Amazon Prime Fresh. So I said, oh, I'm going to be gone for a week. Dan will like this little snack. And then when I came, I realized, oh, they're toasty. I never saw you or heard you talk about the toasty Cheez-Its. I've never seen you eat the toasty Cheez-Its. I thought that maybe it was a mistake on my part because I assumed in your ranking of Cheez-Its, although I'm sure you like the toasty Cheez-Its, they were probably near the bottom.
I bought maybe a few boxes of them, probably back in college, the last time I got them. And I remember liking them. I thought they were good, but I remember thinking like, oh, I don't have a like affinity for the extra toasty Cheez-Its, so I didn't really think of it too much or buy them that often. So I had not had them in a long time. Holy moly. I think they might be my favorite Cheez-It right
now. Were you just going to say you think you love them?
I think I must have been able to say something more. Like, I think I must love them more than any other Cheez-It.
Okay.
But you know what? I'll just say I love them. I love extra
well,
toasty
Cheez-Its.
Well,
why don't you marry the extra toasty
I'm going to marry the extra toasty Cheez-Its. You got like a family-sized box, and I tore through that thing. Like, I have to walk through the kitchen to go to the bathroom in our tiny little New York apartment, and every single time I just look at the counter and know that box is in there, and it's just fucking put a handful in my mouth. Just every it's so good.
Well, I'm glad it made you happy.
We also found
and
out
for the record, you look amazing. It doesn't look like the Cheez-Its did anything to your cute little body.
We also learned that our dog fucking loves them.
Oh my god, Dan gave Razor an extra toasty Cheez-It, and it was like his whole worldview changed. I mean, Razor likes snacks. Okay.
Oh yeah, he loves food.
You give him anything, and he'll probably enjoy it, unless it's like a vegetable. He might be weary of. He's kind of weird about some fruits. When he first had that toasty Cheez-It, it was like, you could see, it was like, you know how that episode of Seinfeld where George has the mango and he's like, oh, it's a shot of B12. Well, this was Razor's shot of B12. It was a different Razor.
He liked it so much that he does this with any food, with any snacks or anything. We can put it down and we'll say, leave it. And he'll just stare at it and frequently drool if he likes it. And he won't eat it until we say, okay, go for it. I put the Cheez-It down. Not only was he drooling buckets on the floor, his nose started running.
Yeah, his
nose was running. So both sides of his mouth had drool coming out, and his nose was running. He was so just feverishly desiring this toasty Cheez-It. So, yes, everyone loves it.
Like a dog owner, like dog.
Yes. Yeah, he's a good dog.
Yes.
So that's it for our suggestions. That's it, folks. So if you want to follow us and find out what we're watching next, you can always follow us on @PanTheStream on Twitter. I always try to make sure to give you a few days heads up on what we're doing the next week. So keep an eye on that. You can email us with any comments or suggestions or anything at panningthestream@gmail.com. If you're on the old iTunes there and want to give us the old 5-star review, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks, Bonk, for watching this with me. It's always really fun when it's something that we're both, like, it's a fun thing to talk about. Like, this is a movie not a lot of people talk about anymore, and I think we both felt the exact same way about it. So.
Yeah, it's nice to go back to these kind of, like, 90s-era movies that are kind of forgotten a little bit, like Cable Guy, for instance.
Totally, yeah. Those have been some of my favorite episodes here. So, we will be watching plenty more stuff in the future, so be sure to join us next week. That's it for this week.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks, Tom, for the theme song. We will join you, everyone, next week for another episode of Panning the Stream.
Have a great day.